You know, it's interesting, of all the programs that we continue to do on this network, I look forward to the Wednesday programs. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort. It is a lot of interesting choices. Good evening. Jeffrey Bennett here. Another installment of To Health With You. Tonight we're going to concentrate on cancer for the most part. As many of you know, I have been not in the best of shape for quite a while. This last 24 to 48 hours has been really strange for me. Don't ask me why. The problem is when I start posting these articles that I post, I begin to have second questions about what I'm really going through. But we do what we have to do. Loss of appetite. Feeling sick. Having no energy. These are all warning signs of stomach cancer. Over the years, I've dealt with prostate cancer, we've dealt with lung cancer, kidney cancer, this kind of cancer, but I don't think I've ever touched on stomach. And this is a very interesting piece. There are about 4,200 deaths due to tumors in the stomach. That's in the UK every year. That according to cancer research people. But in this country, my friends, there are well in excess of 11,000 deaths due to stomach cancer. But then you see symptoms of the cancer can be quite hard to spot. Last week, composer Andrew Lloyd Webber shared the devastating news that his eldest son, Nicholas, is critically ill in the hospital battling gastric cancer. Following that 74-year-old, that's Andrew Lloyd Webber's heartbreaking statement, we begin to reveal the warning signs of stomach cancer. Yes, having no energy, weight loss, difficulty swallowing, indigestion, feeling sick, maybe even a lump at the top of your tummy. Indigestion, of course, usually goes away on its own. But if you find that it's long-lasting, it may be a sign of cancer, often caused by acid from the stomach's irritating the stomach lining or the throat, known as acid reflux. This is quite common, not usually caused by cancer, with certain food and drink or stress or medication often acting as triggers. But it can also be the sign that the cancer has spread to the tissue lining your abdomen, which can cause a buildup of fluid. The NHS advises seeing your doctor if you've had heartburn most days for 3 weeks or more. Fortunately, that's an issue I've not had. Having no energy is one of the other issues. Feeling tired all the time, getting breathless could be a warning sign of stomach cancer. That's because fatigue can be down to low levels of blood, red blood cells. Early and advanced stomach cancer can bleed into the stomach, which reduces the number of red blood cells in your blood over time. This can make sufferers feel tired, weak, breathless, because their blood is carrying less oxygen. It can also lead to passing of blood in stool, which may appear darker, almost black. A lack of red blood cells can also give you pale skin, heart palpitations, and weight loss. Losing weight when you're not trying to is a common sign of cancer. With stomach cancer, this could be due to several reasons, including a loss of appetite, feeling full after eating just small amounts. And this may be caused by a tumor in or around parts of the gastrointestinal tract. That, according to the American Cancer Society. Or it could be caused by, I don't know how to pronounce this word, cachexia. Changes in the way the body uses proteins, carbohydrates, fat, leading to fat and muscle loss due to severe illness. In cancer patients, medics believe that cachexia is caused by the chemicals that tumors release. But unintentional weight loss is a common symptom of many different types of cancer. And it can occur in the advanced stages of other illnesses, such as heart or kidney disease, as well as HIV. What happens if you're having difficulty swallowing? Stomach cancer can cause difficulty swallowing. A tumor in or around the stomach could cause pain and a burning sensation when you swallow. It can also make your food stick in your throat or your chest, according to cancer research. Difficulty swallowing can also lead to weight loss, simply because you're unable to eat enough. Although other conditions such as acid reflux can cause these symptoms, experts urge people who have difficulty swallowing to get it checked by a doctor. And what happens if you're just plain feeling sick? Feeling and being sick could be caused by many illnesses, but it's also a warning sign of stomach cancer. The cancer can cause a blockage in your stomach, making it hard to keep food down. And that blockage stops food from passing through your digestive system, which can make you feel sick. Cancer organizations say that although there's rarely blood in the vomit, if it is red, it could be a sign of fresh bleeding. But if it's dark brown, like used coffee grounds, it could mean the blood has been in the stomach for a while. Interesting. But what happens if you got a lump at the top of your tummy? A lump or a pain at the top of your tummy, that's a sign of stomach cancer. And this pain or lump could be a sign that the cancer has spread to the tissue that lines the abdomen. The resultant buildup of fluid in the lining of the abdomen, called the ascites, can make you feel bloated or your clothes feel tighter. And the lump or the swelling can make it uncomfortable to sit, to move around, to eat, which can lead to a continued loss of appetite. That's the simple side of things. Six warning signs of stomach cancer. That particular piece could well be worth reading. We've got it published at Dr. Kelly's Victory Over Cancer, drkelly.net, if you want it. What else we got going on today? Oh, we got a story we're going to get to here shortly. By the way, I know a good number of you listeners are probably on Medicare, Medicaid, etc., etc. An interesting piece came to me just days ago, called Here Is the Truth. Medicare Advantage is neither Medicare nor an advantage. This became interesting because of who the author was. I'll get to that in a minute. Right now, well-funded lobbyists from big health insurance companies are leading a campaign on Capitol Hill to get members of Congress and senators of both parties to sign on to a letter designed to put them on the record expressing strong support for the scam that is Medicare Advantage. But here is the truth. As the title says, Medicare Advantage is neither Medicare nor an advantage. And the author says, as I should know, for I am a former healthcare executive who helped develop PR and marketing schemes to sell these private insurance plans. The author says, during my two decades in the industry, I was part of an annual collaborative effort to persuade lawmakers that Medicare Advantage was far superior to traditional Medicare, real Medicare. And we knew that having congressional support for Medicare Advantage was essential to ensuring ever-growing profits at the expense of seniors and taxpayers, by the way. The author says we even organized what we insiders derisively called granny fly-ins. We brought seniors enrolled in our Medicare replacement plans to Washington, equipped them with talking points, and had them fan out across Capitol Hill. But instead of joining with the corporate lobbyists in extolling the benefits of Medicare Advantage while obscuring the program's numerous problems, Congress should work to lower the cost of health care, he says. The author says, I regret my participation in those efforts. Over the 20 years since Congress passed the Medicare Modernization Act, the Medicare Advantage program has become an enormous cash cow for insurers, in large part because of the way they have rigged the risk scoring system to maximize profits. As Kaiser Health News reported recently, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services estimated net overpayments to Medicare Advantage plans by unconfirmed medical diagnosis at $11.4 billion. That was just for last year, 2022. 1 year. You can imagine what the cumulative historical total would be. The Medicare and Medicaid programs have become so lucrative and profitable for insurance that United Healthcare Group, the nation's largest health insurer and the biggest in terms of Medicare Advantage enrollment, got 72% of its health plan revenues in 2021 from taxpayers and seniors. In fact, all of the United Health's enrollment growth since 2012 has been in government programs. Enrollment in the company's employer and individual health plans shrank by 370,000 between September 30th of 2012 and September 30th of 2022. Much of the $81 billion in United Healthcare collected in revenues in the third quarter of last year alone was subsidized by American tax dollars. And members of Congress on both sides of the political aisle, both sides of the Capitol, are at long last calling for more scrutiny of the Medicare Advantage program. Senator Chuck Grassley has called for aggressive oversight of the Medicare Advantage plans to recoup overcharges, and was quoted in the Kaiser Health News story, as was Senator Sherrod Brown, who said that fixing Medicare Advantage is not a partisan issue. And as Representative Katie Porter commented, when big insurance bills taxpayers for care it never intends to deliver, it is stealing our tax dollars. And I know that Democrats and Republicans alike care about the financial stability of the Medicare program. But instead of joining with the corporate lobbyists in extolling the benefits of Medicare Advantage while obscuring the program's numerous programs or problems, and in the process helping big insurance make massive profits, Congress needs to work to lower the cost of health care. Medicare Advantage is a money-making scam. I should know. I helped to sell it. But I'm going to continue to work alongside patients and caregivers and elected officials to address the problems. Now, who's the author? Man's name is Wendell Potter, the former vice president for corporate communications at Cigna. He is now the president of Business for Medicare for All. Author of a best-selling book called Deadly Spin and Nation on the Take. Amongst the truly sad things are is when I read this, I realize who my Medicare insurance company is. United Healthcare. I will say they've taken very good care of me. But oh my God. Simply amazing, is it not? What else we got going on here? Oh, we're going to get to the main story here tonight, shortly. Interesting piece dated several days ago. Hang on. Written by Brett Wilkins. This is a website that I have been completely unfamiliar with until just a few days ago, called commondreams.org. It is profound, the number of articles that are posted on it dealing with healthcare and cancer and heart disease and other issues. This particular one is interesting. Brett Wilkins' column is entitled Appalling. The Biden administration declines to force Big Pharma to cut the price of prostate cancer drugs. What? You see, this decision effectively rubber stamps continued Big Pharma abuse. And strangely enough, that statement was made by a Democratic lawmaker. Patient advocates last Tuesday blasted the Biden administration's refusal to... No, I'm sorry, this Tuesday. Yesterday, blasted the Biden administration's refusal to compel the manufacturer of life-saving prostate cancer drug developed completely with public funds to lower its nearly $190,000 annual price tag. In 2021, prostate cancer patient Eric Sawyer petitioned the U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra to grant march-in rights under which the government can grant patent licenses to companies other than a drugs manufacturer for enzalutamide, which is sold under the brand name Xtandi by Pfizer and Japanese pharmaceutical giant Astellas. The drug's development was 100% taxpayer-funded, yet a one-year supply of Xtandi currently costs $189,800 in the United States, or up to five times more than its price in other countries. You see, this is the subject I brought to you time and time and time again. Why are we having to fork out $190,000 a year for this drug for prostate cancer when other nations are paying one-fifth that, which is still an outrageous price, no matter how you cut it? HHS's National Institutes of Health said on Tuesday it does not believe that use of the march-in authority would be an effective means of lowering the price of the drug. And what the Biden administration is saying is that charging U.S. residents three to six times more than any other high-income country is reasonable. The agency added it'll pursue a whole-of-government approach informed by public input to ensure the use of march-in authority is consistent with the policy and objective of the Bayh-Dole Act, a reference to legislation meant to promote the commercialization and public availability of government-funded inventions. Bayh-Dole, that goes back some years, does it not? James Love, director of the Washington, D.C.-based advocacy group Knowledge Ecology International, called the administration's rejection appalling. What the Biden administration is saying is that charging U.S. residents 3 to 6 times more than any other high-income country is reasonable. It's ridiculous. Absolutely appalling. U.S. Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee Chair Bernie Sanders said in a statement that he is extremely disappointed that the Biden administration denied a petition by prostate cancer patients to substantially reduce the price of Xandi. He goes on to say, this is a drug that was invented with taxpayer dollars by scientists at UCLA and can be purchased in Canada for 1/5 the U.S. price. The Japanese drug maker Astellas, which made $1 billion in profits in 2021, has raised the price of this drug by more than 75%. How many prostate cancer patients will die because they cannot afford this unacceptable price? And Representative Lloyd Doggett, a Democrat from Texas, the ranking member of the House Ways and Means Health Subcommittee, stated, today's decision is a blow to prostate cancer patients, their families, and taxpayers. Developed with U.S. taxpayer research dollars, Xande cost American patients $180,000 a year, as much as 6 times as much as patients in other countries. And this excessive price gouging cost taxpayers $2 billion to cover Medicare beneficiaries' treatment in 2020 alone. He continues by saying the Biden administration has missed yet another opportunity to do something meaningful to lower prescription drug costs and protect taxpayers' investments. The administration's position protects monopolists over taxpayers and patients, despite clear statutory authority and reasonableness to intervene. And this decision effectively rubber stamps continued Big Pharma's abuse. And in a move that the Public Citizen President Robert Weissman called pathetic, HHS and the Department of Commerce announced Tuesday that they would pursue a whole-of-government approach to review march-in authority as laid out in the Bayh-Dole Act by forming an interagency working group. And that group would develop a framework for implementation of the march-in provision that clearly articulates guiding criteria and processes for making determinations where different factors, including price, may be a consideration in agencies' assessments. And in a statement, Becerra said that the administration is committed to increasing access to health care and lowering costs. Is that right? You see, march-in authority is a powerful tool designed to ensure that the benefits of the American taxpayers' investment in research and development are reasonably accessible to the public. We look forward to updates from the Bayh-Dole Interagency Working Group, and at my direction, HHS said we'll review the findings, engage the public, and better define how HHS could effectively utilize our authority moving forward. Brett Wilkins, a staff writer for Common Dreams. It is an exceptionally powerful, powerful piece. I will have it published later tonight. Not immediately later. I've got some things to do as soon as the program's over tonight. I'm bailing out of here for a short while. This past year, one of the biggest income-gathering Hollywood movies, Top Gun, the second chapter to a film that was done, I don't know what, 20-odd years ago? But that's not what we're here to talk about. Not the film. We're going to talk about Top Gun Down. As many of you know, I served 4.5 years in the U.S. Army back in the 1960s. And of that 4.5 years, I spent 21 months of it in Vietnam. In helicopter. Flying around the country, picking up wounded, injured people, civilians, American GIs, Australians, Koreans, people who were our allies, and sometimes captured, wounded enemy combatants and civilians who were our allies. I sit here looking at all of this today, and the report that has come out is that military pilots, but not just pilots, those who serve with them, have an 87% higher risk of melanoma and the worst overall cancer rates. And the Pentagon study shows even ground crews are getting sick. We start to look at the numbers, it's sickening. Air crews, 87% increase in melanoma, a 39% increase in thyroid cancer, 24% increase of cancer of all types, 16% increase in prostate cancer, 16% increase in breast cancer. Most of those would be female. Of the ground crews, a 19% increase in brain and nervous system cancer. Even the ground crews are seeing a 15% increase in thyroid cancer and a 9% increase in kidney and renal cancers. 3% increase in cancer of all types. And even the ground crews seeing a 7% increase in breast cancer. You realize that pilots and ground crews have higher rates of several types of cancer than the average across the U.S. population? This Pentagon study has found high rates of cancer among military pilots, and for the first time has shown that ground crews who fuel and maintain and launch those aircraft have also developed life-threatening conditions. And the data has long been sought by retired military aviators who have raised alarms for years about the number of air and ground crew members that they knew who had cancer. But then you see previous military studies showed cancer rates were on par with the general U.S. population. But in its year-long study of some 900,000 service members who flew on or worked on military aircraft between 1992 and 2017, researchers found that aircrew members had an 87% higher rate of melanoma, 39% higher rate of thyroid cancer, as we shared with you a few moments ago. Does this not shock you? When I read this, it drew me in. For obvious reasons, partially because of my time in service, my time in the air. Among flight crews, men had a 16% higher rate of prostate, women a 16% higher rate of breast cancer. And overall, the air crews had a 24% higher rate of cancer of all types. And meanwhile, the ground crews had a 19% higher rate of brain and nervous system cancers, 15% higher rate of thyroid, 9% higher rate of kidney or renal cancers. ground crew women had a 7% higher rate of breast cancer. That according to the 33-page report, which was shared with House lawmakers last month. And the overall rate for cancers of all types was 3% higher. A 33-page report, which was shared with House of Representatives lawmakers last month. Why isn't this thing making major news? The Pentagon said that the new study was one of the largest and most comprehensive to date. And an earlier study had examined just Air Force pilots and had found some higher rates of cancer. Well, this one looked across all services, and both air and ground crews. Even with the wider approach, the Pentagon cautioned that the actual number of cancer cases was likely to be even higher because of gaps in the data, which is said would work to remedy. The study proves that it's well past time for leaders and policymakers to move from skepticism to belief and active assistance. Those words from retired Air Force Colonel Vance Alcazar, a member of the Red River Valley Fighter Pilots Association. Alcazar serves on his association's Medical Issues Committee, which had lobbied the Pentagon and Congress for help. And the study was required by Congress in the 2021 defense bill. Now, because higher rates were found, the Pentagon must conduct an even bigger review to try to understand why the crews are getting sick. Isolating potential causes is difficult, though. Pentagon was careful to note that this study does not imply that military service in air crew or ground crew occupations causes cancer, the report says. This is because there are multiple potential co-founding factors that could not be controlled for in this analysis, such as family histories, smoking, alcohol use. But once again, aviation crews have long asked for the Pentagon to examine the environmental factors they're exposed to, including jet fuels and solvents used to clean and maintain jet parts, sensors, their power sources in aircraft nose cones, the huge radar systems on the decks of the ships they land on. When Navy Captain Jim Seaman would come home from a deployment aboard an aircraft carrier, his gear would reek of jet fuel. That according to his widow, Betty. Let me introduce you to Captain Jim Seaman. Navy Captain Jim Seaman, A-6 intruder pilot, died in 2018 at the age of 61 of lung cancer. And his widow, Betty, was part of a group that lobbied Congress and the Pentagon for years to look into the number of cancers that aviators and ground crews face. And yet Betty still has his gear stored and still smells of fuel, which I love, she said. And she and others wonder if there's a link. She said crews would talk about how even the ship's water systems would smell of fuel. She and others have mixed feelings about finally seeing in data what they have suspected for years about the aviation cancers. But it has the potential to do a lot of good as far as early communication, early detection, she says. Something called a melanoma. And a melanoma is a big worry for pilots who have significantly higher rates of skin cancer, likely as they are exposed to elevated levels of ultraviolet light. And the study found that when crew members were diagnosed with cancer, they were more likely to survive than members of the general population. Maybe that's because they were diagnosed earlier due to regular required medical checkups. And maybe we're in better health because of military fitness requirements. And the Pentagon acknowledged that the study had gaps that likely led to an undercount of cancer causes. The military health system database used in the study did not have reliable cancer data until 1990. And so it may not have included pilots who flew early generation jets in the prior decades. And the study also did not include cancer data from the Department of Veterans Affairs or state cancer registries, meaning it misses some people who got sick after their service ended. And to remedy that, the Pentagon is now going to pull data from those registries to add to the total count. And the second phase of the study will try to isolate causes. And the 2021 bill requires that the Defense Department not only to identify the carcinogenic toxicants or hazardous materials associated with military flight operations, but also determine the type of aircraft and locations where diagnosed crews served. After her husband got sick, Betty Seaman asked him if he would have chosen differently, knowing that his service might be linked to his cancer. She said, "I flat out asked Jim," and he, without hesitation, said, "I would have still done it." The U.S. military has been rocked by a number of cancer scares in recent years, my friends. The Pentagon is probing cases of blood cancer among missile teams at nuclear weapons silos in Montana. And veterans have reported toxic exposures in everything from contaminated water in California to burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. And of course, now on top of all of that, with all these train crashes we've had in, where was it, Ohio, I'm sorry. It begins to make one wonder what is going to be coming up there. The poisons, the chemicals, the cancers, the deaths. It is becoming profound. Absolutely profound. What's the end result going to be? Very high-priced drugs from Pfizer, no doubt. Another piece we've got published is fairly lengthy, but those that we've shared with you on the air tonight, top gun down, military pilots have 87% higher risk of melanoma and worse overall cancer rates. That is published. It's an awful lot of us that, and you, who have military backgrounds, let us hope you've not been affected. But there's information there that can be shared. That's what I invite you to do. Take an article like this type. Take the link. Forward it out to people you still have access to that you may have been in the military with. The other piece on the 6 warning signs of stomach cancer. Share it. The Medicare Advantage article. Share it. You think I'm going to make money doing this? I don't care about that. That's never been the issue with my being on the air. Yes, I deal with precious metals. Did that before I began doing so much of the other stuff. But the fact of the matter is, there is a market for it. There are those of you who want it. And I believe very strongly in it, as I always have, since a very young age. American College of Physicians are now warning of an urgent threat posed by a highly contagious fungus. Don't worry about it. No. Highly contagious fungus that they claim has a kill rate of 60%. U.S. health chiefs are warning about the dangers of a rapidly spreading deadly fungus. Interestingly enough, just about a week after the hit zombie show, The Last of Us wrapped up, the American College of Physicians said the rise and spread of Candida auris, also known as C. auris, is concerning. It is a microscopic yeast strain that does not form germ tubes and is rarely detected in the natural environment. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention already described the fungus, which kills up to 60% of the people it infects, as an urgent threat back in 2019. But the new research has revealed case numbers more than tripled across America between 2020 and 2021, with multi-drug resistant strains also becoming more common. And most transmission occurs in healthcare facilities, especially among residents of long-term care facilities or among persons with indwelling devices or mechanical ventilators. Healthy people do not usually get sick, but among the frail and the vulnerable, it kills between 30 and 60%. Transmission, they claim, is largely driven by poor general infection prevention and control practices in healthcare facilities. That's according to the authors of the study. And this report was published recently in the Journal of Annals of Internal Medicine, studies the fungus that has garnered much attention in recent months. Increased attention has been placed on fungal infections because of the hit HBO show The Last of Us, which involved cordyceps that evolved to infect people, control their minds, turn them into bloodthirsty zombies who see vines explode out of their bodies and they can infect others. And so the World Health Organization warns that fungal infections are becoming a major threat to public health. And some experts claim that fungi are becoming more common worldwide as the changing climate makes environments more suitable for them. And the latest study looked at confirmed and probable cases reported to state and local health departments and the CDC between 2016 and 2021. And researchers found that infections rose from 1310 in 2020 to 4,041 in 2021. And the CDC showed fungal infections have already caused 7,000 deaths in the U.S., 1.5 million worldwide in 2021. And the latest data showed the increase in C. auris cases are not letting up. 2,377 clinical cases, 5,754 screenings cases last year. And the study also found that cases of the fungus resistant to the antibiotic echinocandin also had risen, about three times the number of cases than in each of the previous 2 years. Now, I will admit to you, this piece I'm sharing with you is somewhat dated. No, it's not. It's dated yesterday, March 21st of 2023. We've got it published on drkelly.net. Antifungal drug echinocandin, the first line of therapy given to treat C. auris. And the fungus was first reported in the U.S. in 2016. 3 years later, the CDC gave the fungus its top level of concern rating because it is frequently multi-drug resistant. passed on easily in healthcare settings can cause serious infections with high mortality rates. And this disease emerged over a decade ago in India, South Africa, South America. Researchers don't know why. Fungi, or fungi, as it were, usually cannot tolerate the warmer temperature of the human body. But scientists think that C. auris might have adapted to survive in a warming climate. And the main symptoms of the fungus are fever and chills, which do not improve. And the fungus can cause many different kinds of infections, such as in the bloodstream, the wounds, or ears. Deadly fungal infection, Valley fever, is spreading across the U.S. Valley fever is something very, very common in Arizona. And according to what we're being told, cases of Valley fever have risen some 20-fold since the turn of the century. And the mortality rate depends on the state, but ranges from 30 to 60%. Spread through direct contact. It may also be passed on by touching contaminated surfaces or equipment. People catch the fungus through physical contact with an infected person. Deadly fungal infection, Valley fever, spreading across the U.S. You look at this thing, it's amazing. There's maps on here showing the spread. 20-fold since the turn of the century. People inhale spores from dust. Infection kills. 1 in 100 cases can get into the bloodstream, spread to vital organs. Fungus spores are whipped up into the air. Valley fever fungus grows in soil, but is too small to see. It is amazing to read this kind of stuff. You know, the crazy thing is, I sit there and look at this program we're doing tonight. There's not an awful lot of positive stuff in this, is there? It's not that we're here to give you the negative. I'm here to share with you the warnings. Some of these things are affecting us. Some of which I've shared with you tonight may be affecting me. And until I shared this with you tonight, it didn't ring a bell. Reading it and preparing it and posting it is one thing, because I don't really read the text of what I'm doing. I'll see the headline. I'll see the basis for what it's there. And it's something to share. But in many cases, until I go live with it, I pay no attention. And there are things I paid attention to tonight. I hope there are things that you have paid attention to tonight in this program as well. Not just for yourself, but for your family, your friends, people that you may have served in the military with. There's much going on. I referenced a few moments ago the situation in Ohio, East Palestine, Ohio. And here's where I'm reading. And I will be posting this in the next day or so. East Palestine soil contains dioxin levels hundreds of times over the cancer risk threshold. One organic chemist stated, "I would not be comfortable living there." Last month, these fiery train derailments likely to intensify following the release of data showing that these levels of dioxin in the soil near the wreck site are far higher than this cancer risk threshold recommended by federal scientists. Quite an introduction to that story, isn't it? It's a short one. Might as well continue on with that. I think we've got enough time. Dioxin is a toxic and carcinogenic byproduct of burning vinyl chloride, a hazardous chemical that at least five Norfolk Southern train cars were carrying when they derailed in early February, sparking a full-blown environmental and public health disaster. And citing a report that Pace Analytical prepared for Ohio's neighbor, Indiana, The Guardian reported that East Palestine soil showed levels of 2, 3, 7, 8 TCDD toxicity equivalent of 700 parts per trillion, potentially stemming from the controlled burn of vinyl chloride in the wake of the crash. And the level at which the EPA will initiate cleanup action in his residential area is 1,000 parts per trillion. And yet the cleanup triggers are much lower in many states, 90 ppt in Michigan, 50 ppt in California. Moreover, EPA scientists in 2010 put the cancer risk threshold for dioxins in residential soil at 3.7 ppt, and the agency recommended lowering the cleanup trigger to 72. This is simply amazing to look at this stuff. The administration tanked the EPA scientists' effort to formally lower the federal cleanup threshold back during the Obama administration. And chemical experts and former EPA officials expressed alarm over the data while acknowledging it was limited to just two soil samples and more testing is needed. And the levels are not screaming high, but we have confirmed the dioxins are in East Palestine soil. The EPA must test the soil in the area more broadly. Karsten Prass, an organic chemist at John Hopkins University, added that the dioxin concentrations in the soil samples examined are actually concerning. He said, "My main concern is that they reflective of the level in the area in East Palestine and of the levels individuals who live near the rail are exposed to. I certainly wouldn't be comfortable living there." And yet, despite outside experts' fears, the EPA regional administrator, Deborah Shore, insisted that the dioxin levels detected in the Indiana report are very low. Lady, you're a scumbag. The reporting came days after Ohio's Republican Attorney General filed suit against Norfolk Southern, accusing the rail giant of reckless endangering East Palestine residents. Ohio should not have had to bear the tremendous financial burden of Norfolk Southern's glaring negligence. And the fallout from the highest preventable incident may continue for years to come, and there's still so much we don't know about the long-term effects on our air and our water and our soil. And in Congress, a bipartisan group of lawmakers is working to build support for legislation that would impose more strict regulations on trains carrying hazardous materials such as vinyl chloride. During the Senate testimony last week, Norfolk Southern CEO Alan Shaw refused to endorse the bill. Oh, that means he finally showed up? If Norfolk Southern had paid a little more attention to safety and a little less attention to its profits, and had cared a little bit more about the Ohioans along its tracks and a little less about its executives and shareholders, and these accidents would not have been as bad or might not have happened at all. That according to Senator Sherrod Brown, the lead Democrat sponsor of the Railway Safety Act, stated during the hearing. Throughout the course of this program, have you begun to fully understand what we're facing? They don't give a damn about we the people. They just don't. What we've just shared with you about East Palestine, Ohio. What we've shared with you from the American College of Physicians about this massive contagious function what we've shared with you regarding the six warning signs of stomach cancer. The military pilots having 87% higher risk of melanoma and worse overall cancer rates. These people don't give a damn about us. Not one bit. And why would they? Medicare, Medicare Advantage is raking in all the bucks. And the taxpayers are paying for it. Grossly overpriced, outrageously cost drugs, medicine. It's sad. Unbelievably sad, people. I hope that you will understand the purpose of that which we have done this program tonight. It is not one where I'm going to make books available for sale, although you know where to get them if you're interested in them. Dr. Kelly's books, they can be accessed through our website, drkelly.net. Just look at the bookstore. But that's not my purpose tonight. This is a sad program with what we've had to share. Copy, share all of this with all that you can. And by the way, my listeners out in Hawaii, I have greatly missed this marvelous couple. I've not heard from you in the longest time. I cannot find an email on how to reach you folks. I do still have your handwritten letter on my desk. Hope you'll get a hold of me. It's past music time, man. Where are you? There we go. My friends, with glass lifted on high, to health with you. We'll see you again.
Let the love that was once a fire remain an ember. Let it sleep like the dead desire I only remember. When they begin, the beginning. Suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the beginning. When they begin the beginning.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.